vision, jungle specialist, critical and survivalist, spitting heaven fire from his lips, burning slave driver.
Welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." We as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. With all that getting, get an understanding. Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage, and catch the live stream from that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Catch the live stream there also. You can go to ourradionetwork.com. Again, that's ourradionetwork.com. They broadcast out to Black Belt and catch the live stream there. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app. And in that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you have the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for an Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted daily by myself or Brother Richard. And do me a favor, before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook. And Time for an Awakening Media is there. Always full of the latest podcasts of the various programs on Time for an Awakening. Interesting articles that you can read, download at later times, and share with your friends. Also check out the Time for an Awakening Marketplace and our partnership with the BB Toomey. Always interesting things being placed in the marketplace. African language classes, classes on education, economics, social systems, health, and much, much more being taught by professors on the continent and in the diaspora. So check that out. Make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. This is the first Sunday program that we're broadcasting in this new calendar year. And special program because we don't have any guests tonight besides yourself. The live audience will be the special guest, and hopefully you'll give us a call and get involved in the conversation. 215-490-9832 is the contact number. Again, that's 215-490-9832. We'll be right back to get the program started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot, Sundays 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. for podcasting or live program scheduling. Hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome back my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at African American Museum here in Philadelphia. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
Better than the last 2 weeks. I'm telling you. You know, Elliot, they're telling me that it's a strain out here. I don't know whether it's a virus or a flu, but it's supposed to be a little bit more strong. But I see a lot of people are catching it. I just got over something. And then it seemed a couple of weeks ago, New Year's Eve. I took a right to the chin.
Okay.
And it was, over. And I'm still working through it. But other than that, it is helping me get new perspective of dealing with 2020. And it just so happened I had just come back from my first visit to the National Mall of African American History Museum. So I don't know if it was as you say, my resistance was low, or just the experience was too overwhelming, and I just like after that it was it. But that was that was interesting for me to experience that museum, especially after hearing so many people talk about it and stuff like that, and what's in it. But just to be able to walk through it myself, and you know, it was I would go again. I'm glad they built it. I may have some challenges about it. I mean, not challenges specific. I have one big challenge. I think this is American culture in general, but African American culture specific. But I'm glad that the architect, July, I think it was, the architect, Philip Freeline, okay. He passed in July, you know, and he was the architect for the museum. And I would say he did him and the support staff and really doing the design and everything. They did I would give them their props as far as the layout of it. And it was still, it was raining that day, Elliot, and it still was a lot of people. I mean, people were waiting outside.
Okay.
And in some cases to get downstairs, which you know, downstairs is the, when you go back to 1400, as far as the way it's laid out, you really had to wait upstairs because it was always filled to capacity.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, so, but that was interesting. That was interesting. But I'm glad to be back.
Yeah. Well, listen, we'll spin off into some open forum topics. You know, one of the major ones, that's out there is this impending conflict or war, however you want to term it, happening, the situation happening. It's fluid, basically, in the Middle East. But before we go there, Richard,
right.
The museum. Now, let me tell you this, because you might not know it. One of my my best friend, his wife, was one of the chief architects on that museum. Chief engineers, okay. I'm sorry, not chief architects. And she came from the Smithsonian, and she went over to that project. After its completion, they asked her to stay. So she's down there, and I stay in contact with her because my buddy had a severe stroke, a young man too, and he passed away. But I'm still in contact with her, and she let me know that whenever I want to come down, just to let her know, and she'd make arrangements for me. But she's at that museum. Her name is Sarah Drumming. And I should have mentioned it to you when you was down there so you could kind of look her up. But, listen, you'll be going back down there, so we'll try to make some arrangements.
Yeah, definitely. I said I would do it again, you know, just to see. It was one area that I didn't actually go in, and that was the World War One museum. But the, you know, going through the others. But it was... It was just also interesting just to see how people, all different kind of people, were responding to the artifacts. I just was overwhelmed. I just felt, and this is my, you know, ego arrogance, I guess. And maybe I miss it. It seems like it's a lot of entertainment or entertainers. And it may not be, but maybe because I lived through the experience, but that seemed to, you know, kind of was more aware. And, you know, the thing with the whole thing of sports, music, and things like that. But the other part that I was, I guess, you know, going to starting at 1400, which I think, you know, later, you know, another program we really need to explore, because we already dealt with that 1619, but they started 1400, which is, you know, when the Portuguese started to actually begin to get into the enslavement process. But it would seem that, you know, on one hand, they're pushing us for 1619, but the whole business of turning human beings into human property, you know, began for in the European world in this at the 1400s and, you know, the medieval period. And we're not really pushing that as much, that it isn't just about British pirates who actually become the independents, but the whole thing of the whole European experience becoming a part of that. And now they're calling it, and this would disturb me more, this term, and I've heard it before, forced migration. For some reason that just, and I like the listening audience to, you know, chime in on that, on what they think about that, because forced migration, just the sound gives a different, for me, intonation, you know, than the whole business of chattel slavery, the dehumanizing business of chattel slavery, compared to forced migration. A hurricane can force you to migrate. Yeah. Desertification can force you to migrate. You know, internal wars can force you to migrate. You know, so.
But being snatched from your home, that's not, to me, that's not a forced migration. That's an enslavement.
So, you know, you see what I mean? Yeah. And this is what they're, you know, to fit the narrative for the you know, what they're calling the Atlantic enterprise. That's how they're characterizing it, in order to, you know, just characterizing it. And I think that we as American Africans, or Africans in general, need to really make sure that our narrative and the way we want the story told is clear. Or, because forced migration is going to be the new narrative that the next generation and the generation after is going to be carrying. And for them, the way we don't propagate our own history, it would come off like people coming out of Central America or South America right now, who are migrating and are at the borders, are being considered forced because of the destabilization of their economy and lifestyle and where they live. That is no way the same thing as that. Even the change. What's that? The Native Americans moving from, you know, from the East Coast to Oklahoma. That's forced migration, but it's still not the same.
No,
just a thought.
I was reading some of the information about that 1619 project and the sister that was involved in putting that article in the New York Times, and the criticisms behind it. I think it's five or six European professor laureates or whatever at different high-powered colleges, Harvard, Brown, around this country, that have criticized. And the way they term it in the article, and I think you read the article, Richard,
mm-hmm.
The way they term it is not criticizing the facts, just criticizing her view of it.
Right.
I think, and then you got others that weighed in that's not historians at all. Newt Gingrich and others talking about it's full of a pack of lies and stuff like that. But the thing is, you got people critical of this that didn't experience it. Their ancestors didn't experience this. I don't care necessarily how white folks feel, because they don't want to see themselves in the mirror. Mm-hmm. The facts happened, the historical facts, and the treatment of our people is historical fact, and what happened to them. It didn't happen to any other people on the face of this earth, the type of devastation that happened from that enslavement period. No other folks on the face of this earth, and enslavement, or people being indentured servants or slaves, have been going on almost since men have been here. But right. What happened to our people has never happened. Europeans took this thing to a new low when they enslaved our ancestors. They did things that was never thought about by other people.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Hey, greetings to you, Richard and Elliot.
Hey,
Scotty.
Yeah, this is Scotty from North Carolina. Some thoughts that came in my head, Richard, when you were speaking about forced migration. It's not just destabilizing there. First of all, let me say this. I don't feel like, as an African descendant person, and knowing the history of enslavement in this country, that I have to compare my situation to what somebody else is going through. I don't feel the need to compare and to say my situation was worse or whoever. It's just what it is.
Mm-hmm.
You look at this stuff that's going on in Iraq right now, you know, and been going on for 20 years now. Millions of them people is being killed and forced, you know, out of their countries and whatnot. You look at what the U.S. did to Syria, trying to overthrow that government, all them people being killed, then funding terrorists, you know, and now taking out the Iranian general who was the most responsible for organizing the Iraqis along with the Iranians and their allies to get them terrorists out of Syria and Iraq. You know, what's going on in South America is a long history of that. It's more than just, you know, a disruption to their economic system and change of lifestyle. Man, they killing people.
Yeah.
Have you not heard of the death squads that Reagan and them, you know, the whole reason that the flood of crack cocaine came into our country, to our neighborhoods, is so the CIA could fund those death squads that was killing people just because they chose socialism. You know, the same thing happened in Africa. Anytime one of them leaders wanted to implement something other than capitalism, what happens? They come in, they assassinate them, and they get their proxies to turn on them. You know, I seen this article that was pushed the other day that was talking about all the traitors among African people who got other people killed. I was looking at a video about, what's his name, Thomas Saint. How you pronounce
Sankara?
Sankara, and he was betrayed by one of the people who, you know, helped him in the beginning, and then this person betrays them and gets him murdered. I mean, we see these evil white people, and I ain't talking about all white people, but I'm talking about the ones who do this type of stuff. And we see them all throughout history just repeating the same thing. Another thing that came to my mind is we want to talk about the history of chattel slavery. We got to go back further than the 1400s. We got to go to the Roman Empire, which had chattel slavery and enslaving all them other tribes, the German tribes and Africans. And, you know, they was in Africa, too. And enslaving people and enforcing them to fight in the gladiator fights and stuff like that. I mean, slavery is old. They say, you know, that prostitution is the oldest profession in the world. I say slavery is one of the oldest institutions in the world. All throughout human history, you see slavery and chattel slavery, brutal slavery. So we do need to make sure the facts get out about what happened to us. But at the same time, I don't feel like that I should be in conflict with somebody else that's talking about what's happening to them. It's the same devils that's doing stuff to them that's doing stuff to us. And the biggest thing with me is, we can't even after Ava DuVernay, even though we was talking about it long before she came out with her documentary, The 13th, but, you know, still, even after that Oscar-nominated film, most of us still don't acknowledge that slavery ain't never been abolished in this country. It's just moved from the plantation to the prisons. So we still enslaved right now. And that's why I be, you know, of course I support reparations, but, you know, we did a series of programs with not just reparation advocates, but we had some reparations advocates come on. And we was talking about, you know, yes, you need slavery for what happened. you know, not that long ago. It wasn't that long ago. It wasn't even 200 years ago. 13th Amendment, when they claimed to end slavery, was just in 1865, a little over 150 years ago. But what about the 150 years that followed of more slavery and terrorism and what have you? All the 13th Amendment did was change the way that you could practice slavery legally and took it out private hands and put it into the state's hands and what have you. And now you can say it's back in private hands since you now got private prisons and you can trade, you know, in prison stock on Wall Street, just like when Wall Street had slave blocks on the street, you know, with Africans on it. Now,
you know, Scotty Kennedy, just for because what you're raising, I understand. And I just want to, because the perspective that you're raising, and the reason why I'm kind of eerie about the forced immigration is not necessarily, as you say, comparing it to the others, but in the American or the Atlantic narrative, and this is and dealing with slavery specifically, your view on this, the difference between even when we deal with ancient slavery, that what the English did in relationship specifically the English, but also the Spanish and the Portuguese with Africans specifically, is take away the humanity. Other slavery and other eras, other civilizations, they still had a value of their humanness. With American, and specifically with American slavery, which is the basis of American capitalism and the basis of American wealth, slavery, it wasn't just about slavery, it was the commodification of a human being. And that, which is stripping that person out of the human family for the sole purpose of making wealth. And as you say, with the whole thing of with the prison industrial complex, of being able to trade, add value, and use it as a value instrument, human beings. Isn't that different than any other, even dealing with forced migration or even ancient slavery, whether it be in Rome or Islam?
I don't think it's different than what the Romans was doing. These Europeans have always aspired to create a new Roman Empire. When you look at the architect in Washington, D.C., is modeled after Rome. Them people, they dehumanized them people, man.
Didn't take away their...
That language, culture, and values, that wasn't done to a people beside us. It was never done to other people. Even if you look at what Romans did, which is the predecessor or the forefather of these people we're dealing with, they didn't do that. They didn't care whether them people knew who they were or whatever. When they forced them in there to fight lions, kill one another, they didn't care because they had control over them. But they didn't try to strip somebody of their humanity, their language, culture, and values.
I mean, the fact that you enslaving somebody is stripping them of their humanity.
No. What was done to our ancestors was different than that, Scotty. It was totally different than that.
I don't know, man. You know, I don't study Roman history like I used to, because I'm a history buff. I love all history. And They treated them people like crap, man. They ain't treat them people as equals or even indentured servants. They rape them. They kill them. They crucify them. They make them fight wild animals for the entertainment of it. And really, if you look at, when you look at American slavery, here in the United States, yes, some of them people did neglect, but that was their property. They weren't just going to kill them. You know what I'm saying? Because that means I'm losing my wealth when I kill
them. And that's the part that I'm trying to zero in on more than the force of having other human beings do what you want because you have the power, that you turn a person into a commodity. Okay. And that commodity we call property. And people seem, for me, because, you know, I use the example of our credit cards. Now, our credit cards are an inanimate object, but we know it has value based off of the value, the effort we put into it in order to use it. With human property, it was the value was created. That's how the wealth was created. That was the basis of the wealth of America, really, is because it had so many, not because they had so many people under force as other slaves had done and been able to do what they did, but because they had so many people under force and had a numerical value to that person.
Right. Now, also, though, when you brought up the Native Americans, you brought up the Cherokees, and I don't feel sorry for what happened to the Cherokees because some of them Cherokees sided with the Confederacy, okay? Mm-hmm. And they were keeping victims themselves. They was practicing slavery themselves. And they was actually out, them Cherokees was helping catch escaped victims of slavery and return them for a reward. If anybody saw that film Harriet that just came out, everybody talking about the black slave catcher, it was a Native American slave catcher. They just showed him briefly, but he had long braids and they had them dogs and in the swamp. That's historical. That actually happened. Some of them, not all of them. But then when you start now, they had the so-called five civilized tribes. If they were willing to assimilate, which many of them did, their forced migration came later. But man, the genocide, what they did to the Apaches, what they did to them people out west, man, they slaughtered them people to take the land. And then, you know, when I found out about our role in that, when I was stationed at Fort Huachuca, and they have a little museum there. It ain't no big museum, but it's just a little museum on base. And when I first got on base, you know, I was just going around, you know, exploring the base, and I came across this little, it was in a little old building, man, one room building. It wasn't even a big building. And they talking about the Buffalo Soldiers.
Yes.
And them Buffalo Soldiers is the ones who hunted down them Apache chiefs and Cold chiefs. Them the ones that was protecting them white settlers and out there fighting them Indians and what have you. And so while they wasn't enslaved, I think getting murdered, you know, for your land is pretty dehumanizing.
Yeah, I'll consider that. I am trying to validate in my own mind that there is a distinction, and that's why we even having a challenge in the American experience, as I see it, political experience about what it is. Are you a citizen? Because if you're a property, you know, you can be granted citizenship,
right?
And that was up for question. You could be granted citizenship, but you're not a natural citizen. And that's what the Dred Scott discussion was about. And then later on, the civil rights discussion. Well, even if we'll, you know, give you a certain right of citizenship. So can animals have rights?
Do they not take that away after you've been convicted of a felon?
Right. No, exactly. Certainly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. And even when they put the 14th Amendment in place, you know, the 13th Amendment, you know, to abolish it, but the 14th Amendment, which, you know, that civil right, that rights ruling, they generalized it to where it wasn't, even though it was supposed to speak to American specifically, they made it to be citizens. And what we even see now, the evolution of that, so they're telling us, is that the LGBTQ or whatever community is using the basis of that right.
Well, this is the way I look at that, though. I don't feel like any human being should be mistreated. I feel like, I know every human being has human rights. I don't care if they're gay, queer, whatever you want to call them. They shouldn't be discriminated against. Now, I do understand, you know, and then when you look at the 64 Civil Rights Act, it even covers women. Women being discriminated. I don't got a problem with that. I don't got a problem. I don't think that anybody should be mistreated. Man, we supposed to look out for ourselves first and foremost, but I ain't got a problem with any laws that prevent people from being mistreated, you know?
And the distinction, you know, to both of y'all is just that I'm saying, well, when there is something, and you made an excellent point for me, when it was private property and government property based off of, you know, the winning of the civil, you know, the Civil War, the question is, are we still property? And there's a distinction between a property that may have rights and a citizen of the nation
who has rights. They call you state property. Even when I went in the military, I had a black drill sergeant tell me that I was the property of the United States government.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, yes, people are still classified as property once they get you in a certain status, whether that is in prison or whether you volunteer like my dumb butt did. I ain't going to say I was dumb because I didn't want to get no bills. And, you know, I wanted college money, but I didn't want to go into debt. And my sister's still paying off her college debt to this day, man. Got children about to graduate. But I did not have the Pan-Africanist view. I was not knowledgeable on the teachings of Malcolm X at that time when I went into the military. And I'm glad I stopped my daughter when one of my daughters said, I'm thinking about going in the Air Force. And I was like, no, you're not. And told her why. I didn't have nobody, you know, to really talk to me about that. But I became the property for them to do whatever they wanted to do with, you know, sacrifice me at the altar of war profits and what have you. But, you know,
I'm just making the thing that Africans or descendants of those who are descendants of slaves, you know, tongue in cheek, is saying we never shed it because you have to somewhat do that on your own. Nobody can take that classification away from you, especially when it's encoded in law.
Mm-hmm.
It's commercial law and is encoded in federal law, even if it has to be amended to certain rights. But we as a group were considered property totally.
Mm-hmm.
And that's different than being property, making contract, and under that contract, you're, you know, like an indentured, you're negotiating or giving away certain rights, and therefore considered the property of whoever you made the contract.
I mean, Richard, you could actually say that about every citizen in the United States that's paying taxes, whether they in prison or not, because they base their budgets on how much tax revenue they got coming in. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And so, I mean, we're all being exploited, just some more than others. And I'm not calling in to be antagonistic, you know, just to present another view. And I haven't heard it on this program, but I have heard other black people be terroristic and antagonistic to them people on them borders. And then, I mean, come on, man. Ain't nobody going to pick up and leave a homeland where their parents and ancestors is buried just because and risk life and limb crossing that border illegally through the desert where it's a bunch of bodies just because. No, it's because of what the United States is assassinating their
leaders. What they've done in their countries.
Mm-hmm. And so I feel like those of us, and it's not all of us, I don't even think it's a majority of us who try, like I've heard them say, oh, them people volunteering to do that. No, the hell they ain't volunteering to come here. They country being destabilized, it's massive violence. I mean, man, why do we want to antagonize them? You know, we shouldn't. If anything, we should be asking our own, well, let me say this with air quotes, our own black leaders, why y'all keep co-signing on to this mess that the U.S. government is doing all over the world to non-white people? Why do you keep co-signing on? Why you vote for that budget for Donald Trump? You know, you say he a madman and all of, you just gave him damn near $1 trillion budget for the military, and you see what he's doing now, you know? And so I'm like, man, I'm really influenced by Malcolm X. And Malcolm X said that there's going to come a time, and I want to see that time come, where it's not going to be us like my skin color against your skin color, but it's going to come a time of the oppressed versus the oppressor. Because it's an oppressor class, man. And we even, unfortunately, have black folks like Barack Obama who are part of that oppressor class now. That's all I wanted to share. I'm not trying to minimize what happened to us. What happened to us is an ongoing crime against humanity. But I'm just saying I have empathy for the other victims. And like Malcolm X said, I unite with anyone that want to change this condition that exists on this earth. And that means taking out them devils.
Scotty, thanks for your contribution, man.
I agree with you.
Peace. Richard, you know, Scotty raised some different points there when he was talking. But what I did like that he was using a historical perspective when you're talking about Europeans and their behaviors. Since they've been here, or since we came in contact with them, It's always been the same. They've been consistent. They haven't changed. Or they try to give you the image that they have changed, but by and large, they haven't changed.
Right.
This stuff that's happening now, they're doing more than saber rattling when you go into a country and kill leaders, and they wasn't even in Iraq. In Iran, they went to Iraq and killed this man that was visiting Iran, meeting with Iranians. And that's a story in itself. I might want to touch on that when we talk about it. But if you look at the history of Europeans since we've been here and what they have done and the wars that they have conducted, it's not surprising what's going on. That whole century of the 1800s was full of wars, from the 1812 when they was back at it with Britain, to the Mexican-American Wars, the Civil War, the Spanish-American War, all that stuff. And then in the backdrop of all those wars, you had the extermination of Native Americans around this country. Now, let me read this, Richard. It's dealing with the president that presided or was in office when that Mexican-American War broke out. Now, check this out. Look at the mentality of the people that you're dealing with. And keep in mind that mentality has never changed, because they did the same thing in Hawaii when they went there and made that a state. If anybody is a little foggy on that, look back at what the United States did when they went in and basically took Hawaii, and how they conducted themselves and what they did. Now, let me read this here. It's just a brief paragraph. The U.S. clash with Mexico in 1846. When Mexico resisted, James K. Polk, who was the president at the time, visioned of a manifest destiny for America. The war was declared as part of America's effort to forge westward. The first battle took place on the Rio Grande. In 1848, America had taken possession of a huge swath of land, which was Texas at the time. When the Mexicans refused to sell other lands, the United States took it. The modern-day states are Utah, Nevada, California, New Mexico, and Arizona. Now, those states were part of what we consider what was considered back then Mexico. That was Mexican property. Now, let me read this again. Texas, Utah, Nevada, California, New Mexico, and Arizona. And they just took it from those people. Took it. Get out. So when you see now the people coming across the border because of situations that have been created in their lands because of the United States, and people hear ignorantly, I don't care how white people feel, but when you hear blacks talking ignorantly about they're coming into our country, this was their country. That was their land that was taken by Europeans.
Mm.
Then that was just in the 1800s, Richard. When you move up to the 1900s, you know the wars that had been conducted. World War One, Vietnam, World War Two, and all those skirmishes in between, Korean War, all those ones that was undeclared.
I mean, recently, just what they, I mean, the presidents of Venezuela and Bolivia, I mean, they're saying that these are the U.S. involvement in trying to destabilize, take over. I mean, was that just Venezuela? I mean, it was outright in your face to the American public, and that they're just, we're just, you know, we're kicking you out and putting this guy and supporting this guy to be in, even though you won the election. Which is the same thing when you go back to 1958 in relationship to what happened in Iran, right? I mean, it was a newly the newly elected president, and the CIA just kicks him out and put in that other guy.
Well, if you notice,
this ain't nothing new, you know.
If you notice in that Venezuelan situation, now all of a sudden it's a kind of a news blackout. You don't hear anything. Right. You heard that when they cut the power off in the country, they was having problems with their power. Oil was coming out of their faucets. They tried to poison the people. They tried everything they could to try to get that guy out of office. And then when Cuba said that, well, you can't depose a sovereign government, and all of a sudden the so-called treaty with Cuba was thrown in the trash because of their actions in regards to support of Venezuela and the situation that was going on there.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Elliot, on Venezuela, you know what you don't see, and you're right about the blackout. Now we don't hear nothing else about it, although I did see something about that Guido dude trying to stage something like, oh, they locking me out and I can't get in here to vote or whatnot, and they voted against him.
But a
lot of those people in Venezuela that backed Chavez when he was in power and now back in Maduro are black people, man.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But you don't, every time you see on American television, you see them European-looking Venezuelans and what have you, like Guaido. You don't see the Chavistas, as they're known over there, that's now back in Maduro. Man, a lot of them is poor black folks.
Yep.
Even in Bolivia, that was the first indigenous president they ever had. You know, someone native to that land. Because them other people was Europeans, too. You know, just the Spanish kind. That's why they speak Spanish. They European colonizers too. But Evo Morales was the first indigenous. Now they get this right wing white looking woman, and trying to prop her up as the new president after this coup and what have you. And he won that election. And now, man, they hunting down them indigenous people and murdering them, man. It's terrible. It's always non-white people and black people that's on the short end of the stick, man. And I'll say this last thing. In all these situations, man, they always have collaborators, man. They're
not certainly. They can't do it without collaborators.
It's always collaborators. Thanks.
Okay. Yeah, they can't do it without some collaboration from the people that they're trying to oppress.
And you know, Elliot, with the one thing you mentioned about the Mexican-American War, but Mexico, the sovereign, I'm trying to find the actual quote, but the president of Mexico had offered any enslaved person freedom who was able to get to Mexico.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, another basis of, because you see those states that you see were carved out, they were all became, Texas became a slave state and wanted to be independent then and still want to be independent, you know, and they were poor whites.
Yeah.
You know, they call it, the poor white trash, but they wanted to have land and they were willing to exterminate anybody, the native population in that area and the Mexicans in there. But the point that the president of Mexico offered was saying that this, you know, this would, you know, or any enslaved person would be free if they were within the territory of Mexico.
Yeah, I mean, the mentality of the folks that we're dealing with has not changed. It has not. They try to recreate themselves, put a new image out there, and they're doing it for younger people. They're not doing it for your generation, Richard, my generation, Scotty's generation. They're not doing it for that, especially if you know what's going on. They're doing it to affect young minds.
Right.
And our young minds, because they need our people. They need our people being here. You in conversation with some of these old yahoos, and they talking about, oh, you don't like this country, you get out. Europeans, if black folks decided to do that in mass, this country would collapse, and they know it. So they don't want you here, but then they need you here. It's a weird dynamic that we have experienced here with Europeans.
And I like to add another, perspective that we, you know, one of the guests that we've had, and I mean, you always hear me bringing that back up. But if there was a large contingent who say that we're not going to leave, but we're going to operate from a self-governing, sovereign perspective, that we're utilizing our natural right to govern ourselves, whether you talk about it from proportional representation, whether you talk about it from, you know, declaring ourselves as a sovereign people, that same position that you're describing, I argue they would take that position too, because bases, and Scotty raises it when he mentions about the example of Bolivia, and when you look at the people, this whole Western economic system is off of the backs of black people. It was a minority, very small minority of whites who controlled a economic system, global economic system, whether you talk about South America, whether they were Catholics, whether they were Calvinists, you know, whether they were criminals, you know, pirates, they all supported, even if they went to war with each other, they supported that the blacks that we bring here is the basis of our wealth creating system, and our control of them is it. So if we say, whether we say we want to leave, or we say, look, you ain't got no control over me, you know, and we're exerting our sovereign right to self-govern, and we're going to operate as any sovereign people, like Iran is saying, or like Venezuela is saying, or like Bolivia said. See, North American Africans have never taken that position yet. That we're taking, I mean, there's been talk, different policy, different groups, organizations, but we've never as a people said that we just want to be left alone, that we declare ourselves as a different people in this space and territory that we're in. That means we can negotiate with you, but we don't fall under the laws that you run.
Mm-hmm.
Then you will see they will also not say, oh, no, you're not going to do that. And you see any thinking like that, any leaders to talk like
that, they're immediately attacked, smashed, a lot of times killed.
That's why the narrative is so important, because if we can just say we're a part of it, and I mean, we have a legitimate history, especially those descended of America. We have a legitimate history we cannot and we should not deny. I'm not dealing with that. But when we deal with the power relationship, how long can we keep going on and complain about a power relationship that, as you say, has been here from the beginning, 1619. And they created laws to reinforce, created classifications to reinforce, and created wealth to be able to perpetuate that, to where even talking about reparations, we're tallying up the record talking about, well, pay me. But the question is, if you my property, why should I be paying you? when I know in Pennsylvania, when they created the laws of the gradual abolitionist laws of 1780, they had to pay the farmers to the state of Pennsylvania, had to pay the farmers to free, to once they put in place that they were going to have free Africans in this state. And one way they was free, going to pay them and said, well, look, they're going to work for you until they're 20. If they're born, they're going to work for you for males until they're 28 and for females until they're 21. And that's the way you get your money back. That you, your investment that you put into that. That's a, that's a, that's reparations, but that's a negotiated term. But that freedom for those black people, that they weren't a part of it. That wasn't, they weren't a part of that negotiation.
No.
They were of the negotiation. And that's what, you know, that's a different, I think that's a different perspective. So it reinforces what you, for me, what you say in the sense of if we started leaving, sure, because that would be pulling apart the fiber, the foundation of the system.
Exactly.
And that's just not here. That's too. I mean, we talk about France is getting money from those Francophone countries. The money that they get in as a nation, they get money and they take it, they send in it to France. 80% of their reserves. And what then, what kind of freedom is that?
And then people wondering why you have rich countries over there, but the people are dirt poor, and you see them on TV with gas bellies and things like that. When over 80%, 85% of the wealth is going to another country. That's not talked about. Just the results of that type of thing is what's shown in media. Yeah, well.
And that's why it's so important, you know, for us to, you know, through these airwaves to be able to, you know, like, you know, like everybody's saying, we can't be showing no immaturity as this thing moves forward. The risks are even greater now. Because these guys are crazy. We know that the mentality that they imposed on us. How can you watch somebody burn and take their body parts as a souvenir? What kind of thinking is that? What kind of cultural norm is that? And are we talking about a long time ago? What, two generations, a generation ago?
Yeah, it's not. It hadn't been that long. But if we can't look at these things as isolated cases, we have to put it all in perspective and in historical perspective, and then we can fully understand what we're dealing with. If we're going to take a, you know, before we take a break, Richard, I want to read something kind of based on what we were talking about what's going on presently. And plus, I want to come back to what you said about the maturity of dealing with these particular things. But I'll do that after the break. But let me want to read this here going into the break. This is from a published report in 2014, Richard, 5 years ago. Well, we just flipped over, so if you want to say six, okay. It's a published report from PRI.org, and the title is The U.S. is Now Involved in 134 Wars or None, depending on your definition of war. Now, check this out, what I'm going to read, because I'm not going to read all the articles. It's three paragraphs I want to read. It says, the White House spent much of last week trying to figure out the word war was the right one to describe its military actions in Islamic states. U.S. Secretary at the time, and I put that at the time in there, U.S. Secretary John Kerry was at first reluctant. We're engaged in a major counterterrorism operation, he told CBS News. I think war is the wrong terminology and analogy. But the fact is that we are engaged in a very significant global effort to curb terrorist activities. I don't think people need to get into war fever on this. I think they have to view it with a heightened level of counter-terrorist activities. The next day, the Obama administration appeared more comfortable with the word war, yet hardly offered any more clarity. The problem is that our traditional definition of war is outdated. So this is our imagination of what war means. Now, this is the author speaking. World War II was the last time Congress officially declared war. Since then, the conflicts have not been called wars. From Vietnam through the Second Iraq War have actually been congressionally authorized military force. And more frequently, beginning with the War Powers Act, War Powers Act, have expanded so much that according to the Congressional Research Service, it's no longer clear whether a president requires congressional authorization at all. Mm-hmm. So how many wars is the U.S. fighting right now? Somewhere between 0 and 134 is the rationale. Surprisingly, in 2013, the U.S. Special Operations Command, SOCOM, one of the 9 organizational units that make up the Unified Combatant Command, had a special operations force in 134 countries. They were there either involved in combat, special missions, advising, or training forces. Now, they were in 134 countries, and this was in 14. Mm-hmm. That's especially true when it comes to the Joint Special Operations Command. JSOC is the acronym. An operational command with SOCOM that operates with enormous amount of autonomy and secrecy, and some would say little accountability. JSOC was introduced to the world on May 1st, 2011, when Navy SEALs killed Osama bin Laden in a nighttime raid on his compound in Abbasabad, Pakistan. This raid was a collaboration between CIA and the agency almost nobody had heard of. "We're the dark matter," a Navy SEAL told the Washington Post of the JSOC in 2011. "We're the force that orders the universe but can't be seen." To me, they're trying to describe some type of deity. I mean, listen, we're the force
That's what they said.
Okay, we're the force that orders the universe but can't be seen. It says the JSOC, along with the Special Activities Division of the CIA, have been the leading edge of counterterrorism under Obama. The JSOC has carried out counterterrorism operations in Iraq, Afghanistan, Algeria, Iran, Malaysia, Mali, Nigeria, Pakistan, the Philippines, Somalia, Syria, and Yemen. The list also includes Indonesia, Thailand, Colombia, Peru, and several countries in East and Central Asia. "The world is our battlefield, and we are at war," the source told Scahill of the logic that drives the JSOC. "Therefore, the military can go wherever they please and do whatever they want to do in order to achieve national security objectives of whatever administration happens to be in power." Do you hear that, Richard? So it ain't for blacks that's talking this Obama crap. It ain't Obama. It don't care who's the president. I can be president. They're going to conduct this stuff because it's American foreign policy, and that's what Europeans believe.
And anytime you ask people, and this is where, I know you want to go to break, but you ask, and it's so important for me with black people, as we deal with this, this talk about the presidential election, because the presidential election, the president's role is in foreign policy. is in his role is his or her role is the military, the commander in chief. The Congress deals with the budget, but the president deals that. And they gave, when you talk about that sole power, when the 9/11, they gave executive power to the president to strike anywhere that he or she needed to.
Mm-hmm.
In the name of national security. And this is where the maturity of Black people in selecting congressional candidates, senatorial candidates, even local candidates. Do we know what is the national security interest? Are we in agreement with that? That's you know, people talk.
That's
like,
an important,
you know, like,
question.
It ain't even about voting or, you know, pulling the lever or what party. Are you in agreement with it sitting out? Because they celebrate it on the big screen. These hitmen, they give you. I mean, I see these TV shows, you know, now in the cave shows. They are hitmen.
Yeah.
That's all they are. Snipers, electronics. So we got a versatile team, small versatile tactical team. And give you a fantasy and call them the Avengers. They got their own plane. They got their own passports. They in every country. And I think I heard Trump just say that, you know, they'll come after Iraq in the name anywhere. We'll get you anywhere. Well, who you?
Well, you hear what they see of themselves. You hear what they think of themselves. And I'll read it again, just in case the listening audience might be a little confused in what they said in reference to, we're the force that orders the universe, but can't be seen. Also, I guess for anybody that believes, they're Jesus Christ. You're Jesus Christ. They're the force that orders the universe, but can't be seen.
And I'm not saying
that to be offensive to anybody. I'm saying that is the reality of how these people feel about what they're doing and their mission. They're what they consider their manifest destiny. They done made their manifest destiny your manifest destiny. Now, is that the destiny that we want for our children? Because these so-called Black leaders ain't going to speak up and say nothing against what's going on. Is that how you want? You want to be sheep? You want your daughters and sons, all of a sudden, if they come up next year and say, we're going to reinstitute the draft, and you better go down and sign up. You want your daughters going into any of this foolishness to make the world safe for democracy? This crap that these white folks espouse, they can say all that dumb crap. They say it on TV shows or everything else when they putting their hand over their heart, tears streaming down their face. They can believe that crap. That's up to them. That was their forefathers. Do we want these missions, these things? Do we want these for our children?
And Elliot, as Scotty said, because everywhere there's collateral damage. So if you give, even in the recent budget, and they've been budgeting up the Defense Department to do that, to be the masters of the universe. You give them that money so that they can do that. And at the same time, you're going to take away the Social Security money. You're going to take away the food stamp money. You're going to take away the school, you know, the food the children need in school. We're talking about poor children. And then proportionately, we're talking about poor Black children. Or at least that's the interest I'm looking at. So what you're telling me that I'm the collateral damage so that you can go around the universe and be master. And I'm supposed to just say, yes, master.
Wow. Let's take a brief break. And when we come back, we'll go to the phones and get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Hold on a second. I'm sorry. Again, that's 215-498-9832 to get involved in the conversation. Please get involved. Give me your opinion one way or the other. you know, this program here is not like maybe some of the programs you might listen to on YouTube or the internet, where people talk crazy to one another, especially black people, for entertainment purposes and for likes and for subscribers. Get on there talking trash to one another and dumb shit that our people, excuse the expression, dumb crap that our people don't have time for. Let's get involved in some serious conversation about the direction we should be going. I don't want to get on here and talk about, oh, Richard is ugly, Richard is this, that. And, you know, come on. We don't have time for programs that waste time with that immature crap like you were talking about, Richard. Are we children or are we men and women? Do we want to protect our children? Or do we want to just see them led around like we were still in chattel enslavement? We got to establish a direction for our own children. And if this leadership can't or won't do it because they're either afraid or they're collaborators, then we got to develop it among ourselves. That's why we always talk about our people getting involved in grassroots organization in your community to make a change. If it's none there in your community, then start one. Call up. Let us know what's going on in your communities. We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, you can get involved in the conversation. Conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. Time for Awakening. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening, Time for an Awakening, with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
I transformed a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one of the tangible transformations I've created for entrepreneurs in various industries around the country. If this isn't what you think of when you think of accounting and business consulting, then get ready to take down this invaluable information. Are you an entrepreneur suffering with a stagnating company? Have headache customers, staff, or vendors? Are you rebounding from a loss and need help achieving your unrealized potential? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? Hi, my name is Nataki Kamban. If you're ready to go beyond advising and coaching and get results, then call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions recommend and implement the best comprehensive sales, administrative, human resources, accounting, and operations to help you grow into your vision for yourself and your company. Again, from anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072 or pull us up on your device right now and book your free consultation at www.newbusinesssolutions.com. And just mention you heard this special announcement on Time for an Awakening.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
For 12 years, I and others like me had held out radiant promises of progress. I had preached to them about my dream. I had lectured to them about the not too distant day when they would have freedom all here now. I had urged them to have faith in America and in white society. Their hopes had soared. They were now booing me because they felt that we were unable to deliver on our promises. They were booing because we had urged them to have faith in people who had too often proved to be unfaithful. They were now hostile because they were watching the dream that they had so readily accepted turn into a frustrating nightmare. And so the collision course is set.
The desegregation decisions and other type of legislation and Supreme Court decisions depends upon changing the white man's mind. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad teaches us that our own mind has to be changed. We have to change our mind about ourselves.
In what way?
Well, so he teaches us the importance of moral reformation, a knowledge of self. And for instance, the average so-called Negro, he doesn't think that he can go into business and provide jobs for himself. And because of this, he thinks that he can only get a job from the white man, or he can only get clothes from the white man, or he can only get food from the white man. And we who follow the Honorable Elijah Muhammad are taught that the same thing that the white man has done for himself and his kind, if our people could be if we could be cured of our slave mentality that was indoctrinated into us during slavery, we would realize that just as the white man can do these things for himself and his kind, we can get together in unity and harmony and do the same thing for ourselves and our kind.
I'm not wondering at all about them. I'm concerned with the suffering and the pain of the masses of black people. No one wants to pay reparations. The Jews received over $100 billion in reparations and gets $4 billion annually. A Holocaust museum was set up for them on this soil for over $200 million, and they get $21 million annually just for operating expenses. But the Catholic Church, the Pope, the Jews, the Arabs, white people in general, no one wants to pay reparations to these, the sons and daughters of Africa. So I speak to them. I don't speak to the family of those two Jews. There are too many of us for me to speak to them.
And one of the reasons why I'm always happy to come to this organization, because you're the only one, you're the only black organization, again, that understands to put race first. Race first. Race first. And I've had some white folks to tell me that I was a flaming militant, a radical, or whatever all of these names were that they called me. And I said that I am very pleased that you called me a nationalist, because you could have said that I was a member of the NAACP or the Urban League. So I said, I'm very pleased of the names that you have given. But I said that because we put race first, something is wrong with us. But everybody else puts their own first, because God bless the child who has his own. And so I think that race first is very important. And though we meet in a different venue, we're not at the slave theater, we're not at the church, we're now at the Masonic Temple, it really does not matter where we are physically. It matters where we are in our minds. And wherever we meet, as long as we know that we're Africans and as long as we know that we're black people living here in America, we know exactly who we are. You notice you can put an Uncle Tom in any venue in the White House. You can even put him in his. He's going to still be a Tom. You can put him anywhere you want. Well, it's the same thing with us who are strong people. Wherever we are, we're going to be the people that we need to be.
Winning
Chris, let me just say this before our time winds up. And that is, I want the people in the audience to go back and look at the video clip from Roots. It's entitled something like Breaking Kunta Kinte. That scene opens with Lorne Greene sitting in, who's the plantation master, sitting in his office, and then Fiddler comes in and says, we don't want to be too hard on the runaway. Kunta Kinte has just run away and been caught. And so the time comes for him to get his lashing. And if you look at this scene, it's about 9 minutes, and study the scene. Study the role of everybody or bodies that are in this particular clip. And you will find that there is an equivalent role in the political life of our country today, whether it's on the national level or on the local level. There's the black man who actually does the whipping of Kunta Kinte. There's the white man who does the whipping. There's the black man who intervenes with the boss man and tries to save the life of Kunta Kinte. There's Kunta himself, who eventually is forced to admit that his name is Toby. And there's dozens of bystanders, black, who are watching. This is a very powerful scene. And it's an analogy of exactly what is happening in our community today. Let's give those characters names in our community and call them what they are, and then take care of business about that.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 8:28 here in the city of Philadelphia. And we're in open forum. Rest of the way, give us a call, 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir.
Before I go to the phones, let me read this. This came out this morning. It says Trump tweets spark Iranian outrage, accusations of war crimes. It says the U.S. and Iran are trading specific threats. President Trump Saturday night tweeted out that the military could target 52 Iranian sites immediately, including some important to Iranian culture. The rhetoric suggests that a hot conflict may not be fading, with Trump's warning about cultural sites prompting Iranian officials to accuse the president of flouting international law and threatening war crimes. You know, you're talking about threatening people's cultural sites. Now, they have Shia and Sunni. I think it's different sects in Iraq, and you have a lot of Sunnis in Iran, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
What could galvanize those people better than dumb European rhetoric like that? You're going to target somebody's cultural sites. That just reminds me of thousands of years ago, a couple of thousand to be exact, maybe a little over a couple thousand, when Europeans burned the libraries in Alexandria with all the information that our ancestors had from the ancient world that told our people with the story of what we had accomplished and how we accomplished it. This fool went in and burned it. This man went in and burned it because he wanted history to start from his point, his directive. So you burn people's cultural sites. That just like I said before, this mentality of these people have not changed. You're threatening to burn or to bomb somebody's cultural sites. And if you remember, they did that when they went into Iran the first time.
Right. Stole.
And stole a lot of stuff.
All those artifacts that were gold, nobody know where they are. You know they're sitting in somebody's museum.
Y'all mean Iraq. They didn't go into Iran. They ain't never been in Iran.
Iraq.
But Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Stole. A lot of that stuff they still ain't got back.
Mm-hmm. I mean, old.
Let's go to 404. Are you there?
Hello.
Yes.
Yes. I wanted to address something that came up earlier.
What's your name, brother?
What?
No, I said, what's your name, brother?
A discussion was had.
Brother, what's your name?
Oh, this is Lamont from Atlanta.
Okay. Okay, Lamont. Go ahead, bro.
So when a discussion that you all had was a discussion that I've an argument that I've had with some of my loved ones. And that is the argument over whether or not chattel slavery is worse than anybody else's plight or any other slavery. And I try to tell my people that I'm talking to is like, I really don't want them to get caught up in that kind of argument. There's no need to compare my suffrage to anybody else's suffrage. It's similar to, like, if there were two girls that were raped, I wouldn't want to see them argue about over whose rape was worse or because of the circumstances or because of how one was penetrated versus the other, then the other ones was worse than the others because it's still relative to the person. And either way, it's just a bad situation. So we know that chattel slavery is we know. So we don't have to say that, you know what I mean? We don't have to make that argument because when we're making that argument, oh, my slavery was worse than whatever you went through, or I've seen this argument come up when we're talking about Jews and the Holocaust, and for someone to make that argument, I feel like a child when I'm trying to argue that point. It doesn't matter. I don't have to do that. Mm-hmm. Bottom line is, chattel slavery was a horrible, horrible thing. And that's basically all needs to be said. And everything that I need to say about or in reaction to how horrible chattel slavery is can be said without me arguing about whether or not somebody else's was not as bad. Because pain is pain. So just to end off what I'm saying is I just feel that when we get to a mature level of discussion about that, I mean, you know, just, you know, no disrespect to anybody, but I just feel that for us to be mature as a race or mature as people, we shouldn't argue over whose suffrage is worse. We should just understand that suffrage for that person was bad and suffrage for us was horrible. And suffrage for somebody else was terrible, and that's that. And keep it in the context of what we're talking about. You understand what I'm saying?
Oh, certainly I do.
Yeah, definitely.
Go ahead,
definitely.
Richard. Go ahead, Richard.
It's something about that burns me. I can't stop from going back in my mind to, like, imagining two women arguing over whose rape was worse. In my opinion, is they're both horrible things.
Yeah, and I agree. The comparison thing, I agree, is, you know, really needs not to be necessarily a part of our narrative. But let me ask you this: How does the classification of forced migration deal with how does that impress you in relationship to the classification or narrative of chattel slavery?
They would be two different classifications and two different narratives, and mm-hmm. then I would leave it at that. Mm-hmm. If I needed to go into depth in explaining that because someone didn't understand, I can. And mm-hmm. y'all did do that. Y'all explained how forced migration can happen in this way or that way or that way or this way. You know, someone mentioned war, weather, anything can happen that can be forced migration. So that was a good discussion. But somehow or another, and that's definitely not chattel slavery. And I like the definition of chattel slavery as taking away someone's humanity. And something else that wasn't discussed in that is what I think of when I think of trying to take someone's humanity is just the whole process of breeding, using women as breeders, taking children away at birth and selling them. And then you also talked about taking away someone's language and history and culture. So for those things, those dehumanizing things, whereas I also agree with Scotty in the fact that imprisonment is dehumanizing. Taking someone, what he was talking about, the Romans, what they did to the, you know, like he said, they had the slaves and they were gladiator fighting, or, you know, they'd put somebody in there with lions and make them fight lions. That's dehumanizing as well. So I understand that those are dehumanizing things. And we know, you know, to be honest with you, I know that there's nothing worse, you know, sociologically, than there's nothing worse than chattel slavery. I know that, and you know that, and we know that. But to hear to somehow or another, a lot of people get into that argument, and once that argument is going, it just it strikes a nerve with me, because we shouldn't even get caught up in that argument. Whoever brought it up, like, there's no reason to get engaged with it. Yes, definitely, chattel slavery and forced migration are not in the same category at all.
I agree.
Lamont, I agree, man. Thanks for your contribution. Did you have anything else, or that was it?
No, that's all.
Hey, man, thanks for your call.
Appreciate that.
Peace. Lamont raised some excellent points there, Richard.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the comparative thing is not really really important to do. Like, you have to justify ourselves. So I wholeheartedly. My concern is that we master our narrative so that, as you alluded to, the next generation won't be thinking, especially if the history is only our narrative, you know, is only a episodic kind of thing, like going to the museum in D.C., or coming to the museum in Philadelphia, or Newark, or, you know, Baltimore, or New York. And it's making sure that our narrative, so that people understand, when we take policy positions, we take political positions, we take economic positions, that it comes out of a unique experience that is unique to us, and is justified out of that history, not necessarily in comparison to anybody else, but just in looking at us. So that's what I'm, I agree, it's not about comparing, but it definitely is about taking ownership of, so that, you know, because the America is not necessarily looking for the future to say that they had slaves at all. I mean, I think I'm over exaggerating, but, you know, at one point, America said people who were enslaved were happy.
Yeah,
that was a national narrative.
Hey, yeah. Rich.
Yes.
Did you hear what Mayor Pete said about?
Oh yeah.
He was on and he was talking to children.
Right.
And this goes back to what Elliot was saying. It's not necessary. This propaganda ain't necessarily for you or me, you know, older, even though they already been brainwashed a bunch of our generation, but it's the new generation.
It's directed to the children. Yeah.
Children telling them children that the founders didn't know slavery was evil back then. Man.
Yeah. And it's good. That's what I say, and that's what we have to use these platforms, not necessarily to, as everybody say, not to make a comparison or even get into debate, but to continue to bring out the multidimensional aspects of our narrative in order, because you can't do problem solving unless you identify what the problem is. And if it's just a force thing, that's one thing. But if it's something that was ingrained in custom, law, and by force for a singular purpose for few to be able to have access of wealth, and it's what you're trying to come from other, then you are dealing with custom and law that you have to transform in order to if you want to, and that's the question. Some people are saying, well, you want to change it, you know, or transform it, you know, this system. But if you're the, you know, and some say if you're the bottom feeder and that's the structural position that you're supposed to hold, or at least 2/5, 3/5 of your particular, and it's a difference when you have, you know, different, looking at different groups, you know, because we're talking about looking at our group and the proportion, 2/5, 3/5 of the population that is going to be structurally on the bottom. And then, you know, Ellie, you know, I walked away from the last conversation with one of the callers we had, and, you know, I'm assuming he was young and whatever, but his concern was actually dealing with this thing, you know, rings with me, because there's a lot of young people out there trying to do the right thing and raising a family, you know, working. I see people working 3 jobs. I mean, they 20 something years old, and they, and I'm hearing them on the bus, they working 3 jobs. That's, you know, and they
to,
you know,
just
to, right
just
now,
to make a living wage.
Right. You know, I mean, is that what we aspire to? I ain't saying life is easy, but that structurally is the way the system is.
Yeah. Our people are in a constant struggle all the time for jobs, for rights, for our existence, to be respected. I mean, listen, we got to come up with some solutions for our people. We got to. It's a must. And there's people out there with a lot of solutions. But we got to galvanize these things, Richard. We hear a lot of solutions being bandied about. We got to galvanize these things. And we got to realize that it's an enemy among us that utilizes people that look like us to sow dissemination, to sow mistrust, and non-belief, if you want to use that term, among our people.
Hey, you know, and also, you know, going back to what we was talking about, I feel like, and again, I'm only talking about a small minority of black folks that I see. You know, I'm not even going to say it's 25%. But you know what it does when some of us are focused on, you know, these other immigrants coming here, whether they coming from Africa, the Caribbean, or South America, or whatever, like they coming to take something from you. You know, when you focus on them people, you know who you taking the focus off of?
There you go. I agree.
Off of the person who's responsible for these people wanting to leave to try to find somewhere where they can even live.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they come here and ain't nobody making no living wage unless you already got some money. You know, and you come in here and you start a business, then you get tax breaks and all of that. But the majority of people, man, is struggling worldwide. You know, wealth inequality ain't just in the United States, it's worldwide, man. Them people over there rioting in France right now because they're trying to take their pensions away. You know, And so when I feel like, you know, and again, you know, I'm just so informed by Malcolm's teachings, you know, after he went on his Hajj and what have you, and started, you know, looking to work with Dr. King and others. And you know, Dr. King was moving towards Malcolm's more radical positions, and they killed both of them, you know. But I just really feel like when we start focusing on other non-white groups and acting like they the problem, we taking our eye off of the real enemy, you know, the one who oppressing us all, man. And that's just just something that I feel like is just going to prevent us from even coming up with the solutions, man.
You know, Scotty and Elliot, because as you say, taking it off of, because if we were, and I don't know how to say it, you know, other than colloquially, if we were on our game, then we would be dictating what the policy is in relationship to even like what's the going to be effect on us compared to reality. Because other people are hiring them. I mean, what they were supposed to do for business people, where they were supposed to register. They never indicted any business person.
They didn't.
Who broke the law? Now, if it was, you know, Scotty, to me, that's who we should have been. Well, wait a minute now. Why these guys get off scot-free, and you're going to tell me that the problem is people at the same time you bombing the area or you creating devastation? That when I'm looking at my area, when I'm looking at gentrification, when I'm looking at poor education, I'm looking at lead in the water, and y'all telling me we can't do nothing about it? We looking at Michigan. I mean, a whole population of young people in Michigan are going to be brain dead. And we hear peep about that.
Nope.
You know, I had, speaking on the water, because, oh, man, they do power, man, with them coal ash ponds down here in North Carolina have poisoned a whole lot of people's well water. It's getting into the river. I don't even go fishing no more. When I was a teenager, we used to go swimming and fishing in the Catawba River. I used to take my daughters, once I had children, while they were still young, teach them how to fish. I don't even go no more, man, because them fish got carcinogens in them because of that coal ash then seeped into the doggone river, man, and because they got an organization called the River Keeper that tests them fish, you know, to see what's the level of carcinogens, which is a cancer-causing agent. And now Duke Power, these doggone politicians in North Carolina, Duke Power had got a $1 billion fine. But seeing, like you were saying, Richard, some people ought to be going to prison, but they get fines and what have you. And now they didn't cut their fine. They ain't even got to pay it all. And then guess who's going to end up paying for it anyway? Because Duke Power raises their every year. That's going on all across this nation, man. Mm-hmm. But somebody told me, though, because, you know, we were talking about Sanders' campaign, and he was talking about, you know, reinstituting standards for water, you know, because, you know, Trump has gutted pretty much rent. EPA useless, and it didn't just start with him though. But then this guy gonna tell me, well, we don't need that clean water bill, what he talking about, cause you know, Obama drunk the water in Flint, so the water's fine. And I'm like, oh my God, brother, do you know how you sound? What do you think, melanin filters out lead from water or something? It's just crazy talk, man.
and that's what we're dealing with too.
Let's move on to the next caller here. And you know, Richard, let me read this to kind of coincide with what Scotty mentioned about, and I think the caller Lamont mentioned about taking the focus off of who's really behind this. And this happened today. Well, it came out today. It was in the Daily Mail. It says former NFL quarterback Colin Kaepernick has come under fire as he tweeted that there is nothing new about American terrorist attacks against black and brown people for the expansion of American imperialism. Kaepernick tweeted this Saturday. In a separate tweet, he wrote, America has always sanctioned and besieged black and brown bodies both at home and abroad. America's militarism is the weapon wielded by American imperialism to enforce policies and plunder anyone of the non-white world. That was his two tweets that he sent out. So, you know, he immediately got responses from whites across the board, whether they was actors or people in the news media. I'll read a couple of them. Kaepernick's tweets drew swift and angry response from prominent conservatives who disagree with his statements. Former Fox host Megyn Kelly, who was fired from a job at NBC for defending blackface, demanded to know if Nike was proud of its ambassador Kaepernick. Because everything to him is racist, tweeted Kelly on Saturday night. Everything, even fighting against terrorists who kill Americans. You're welcome to move to Iran, says Fox Nation host Tommy Lauren. Maybe you can get a job over there. Here's another one here. Actress Mindy Robinson tweeted, we're killing terrorists, bud, but you're a spoiled SOB who hates America and all. But if you're seriously going to defend Islamic terrorism, please feel free to move to the Middle East. I'm sure you can experience whatever you think you want to find you're not finding here, I'm sorry. Maybe Iran needs a shitty quarterback, says actor Nick Searcy. Actor Dean Cain, meanwhile, simply tweeted that Kaepernick's statement is the dumbest tweet of the year so far. So we see across the board, whites don't like it when you criticize what's going on. That's a part of their culture. That's a part of their heritage. This war and killing is a part, is just as American as apple pie.
Part of their DNA. And since you brought up Iran, I found this old article from 2008 from CBS News. It wasn't from one of the alternative news sites that I trust more than I trust CBS, but this came from CBS. When 9/11 happened, when them towers fell, Iran, the whole world was sympathetic to the United States and its citizens, the whole world. Now, some of them terrorists that was involved, and the majority of them came from Saudi Arabia, not Iran, but Mike Pence sent out a tweet talking about the Iranians helped 12 of the 19 hijackers sneak into Afghanistan or something like that. And I knew that wasn't true. And so anyway, I was able to find a 2008, this was after Obama got elected, and some of them Bush officials started talking about, you know, what had happened during that period. Iran actually expelled those people, snuck out of Afghanistan into Iran. Iran rounded up about 300 of them Arabs, because, you know, them Iranians ain't Arab, they're Persians. Okay, and so they rounded up 300 of them, made copies of their passports, expelled them to Saudi Arabia, turned the passports over to the UN Secretary General to give to the United States so that they could track them dudes and what have you. And then, you know, although I don't agree with it, you know, Iran tried to help them fight the Taliban in Afghanistan. And doggone George Bush rebuffed all of their, they was trying to help us, man. They was trying, I ain't going to say us, but they was trying to help the U.S. government get the terrorists right after 9/11. Now, as they always do, you know, they want to rewrite history.
Well, that's what they said. Suleiman was one of his major thing was to deal with ISIS.
You know why them people was by the thousands in the street crying over this man? Because ISIS, who the Saudis and the U.S. government created them, just like they created Al Qaeda. Mm-hmm. That's how go in, destabilize. Now we got to come in and save the people. You know what I'm saying? And that's the trick they keep playing over and over and over. But, and I compare Soleimani to Gaddafi.
Right.
I compare them to Gaddafi. Gaddafi was the first person to issue an arrest warrant for Osama bin Laden. And he was tamping down on them jihadists and had them all locked up and put them in prison and all of that. And he had actually, you know, given up his quest for weapons of mass destruction and then became a U.S. ally and start. And they even had, you know, a CIA base there in stationed there in Tripoli, where they was helping them to track these terrorists. But Gaddafi apparently didn't know that the United States was the, you know, them and the Saudis were the backers of these terrorists. But he called himself trying to do the right thing and going after these terrorists. And he was doing too good of a job, so they killed him, all right? And the same thing with Soleimani. Soleimani, when them ISIS was advancing on Baghdad, the capital of Iraq, it was Soleimani who came in and organized them and beat ISIS back. That's why them Iraqis love that man so much. And yes, it does have something to do with, you know, both majority populations being Shia Muslims and not Sunnis like the Saudis and what have you. But that's why they killed them. But I just read, I had talked to Elliot earlier today, and Elliot, I came across some new information. They're saying that Donald Trump and them tricked Soleimani into coming there. He was there to work, to try to ratchet down, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Tensions. And he was right, trying to make peace with the Saudis and the Iraqis and all of that and bring everybody together. And the U.S. was like, and I don't remember it exactly, but what they're saying is they baited that man into Iraq, the Trump administration, and then assassinated him.
That wouldn't surprise me at all.
You know, one thing you raise, you know, Scotty and Ellie, you know, which we need to, you know, like just give our perspective, and this is what I'm calling the African-American experience, maturity, because we have a unique position as we look at the global and world affair when we make an analysis. We make an analysis from a different, we don't make it from a liberal or conservative. We truly make a different analysis that we need to really, because we see that there's some different power modes going on. You know, what they just gave Saudi these planes a couple of months ago, was mm-hmm. that in September?
Yep.
You know, they've been trying to hold off Israel from attacking Iran for what, since Bush the Younger and Obama has been trying to hold Iran, because Israel has been trying to bomb Iran all along, right? So, you know, and they just had a discussion about, because Trump brought up about deep state, you know. Now, at what point is this policy to do this here, to even think that this gamemanship that they're doing, you know, what is it that they're, you know, they're trying to realign the power relationship, and obviously in the Middle East, and it seems like new, more oil reserves are being found every time we turn around. Now, I don't know how much oil is still going to be the thing, but I think Iran just came up with a more oil reserve that they found in that area. You know, we already know that what's that port of Bessness that Russia is dealing with. The whole thing of the oil transportation going through the that Baltic area.
Yeah, Strait of
Hormuz. You know, and what did they call Trump with Putin? There's a broader dynamics happening here to destabilize any legitimacy of what the nation state is supposed to be about. And who was Trump's first Secretary of State? Wasn't he Tillerson?
You know, he didn't have a couple. Head of, it might have been
whatever.
because he had people in it. That was like a revolving door early on. Every time you look, somebody was getting fired or quit.
It was Tillerson from ExxonMobil.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, and it's that group. But this here, this particular foreign policy initiative, the Obama group of it, it took the craziness of Rumsfeld and them to do the Iraq thing, but that military policy group has been there, and then they cleared out the State Department. So this type of strategy to reorganize the Middle East is something unique, and at the same time, they got all these bases in Africa, while Africa is talking about unifying. So it's something unique that I think that we present a perspective, a unique perspective, and Kabanoff as an entertainer. I mean, you know, he's a sports person, you know, being able to put out, because even just putting out that you're an imperialist.
Oh, you're talking about Kaepernick. Okay. You said Kavanaugh. I kind of lost. I mean, Kaepernick. Okay.
Kaepernick. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That this ain't nothing new.
Yeah, they didn't like to hear nothing like that. I mean, he kind of laid it out.
I
hope some of the, especially the younger black folks that might have been critical of him, and when Jay-Z and them turned tail on him, I hope they kind of analyze some of these statements that he's making, and I hope it doesn't go over their head. Because that statement alone speaks volumes.
Mm-hmm.
You want to grab these three while we're going into a little overtime? Let's clear up this board. We got three callers online here. Let's go to 602 first. 602? 602? 602?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, good brother. Yes.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, good brother. Well, I'm Marcus here.
Hey, what's up, brother?
So, Kaepernick should take a page from what Nelson Mandela told Ted Koppel, when Ted Koppel asked him that question about what's his name, Gaddafi. He said, "Hey, Koppel, your enemies are not my enemies."
Right.
I think that's what black people need to tell them. Say, "Look, Trump, your enemies ain't my enemies." But just to piggyback on while brother BTR was talking about why people come to America. See, we have to bear in mind that America is just 5% of the world's population. Yet still they control 80% of the world's wealth. So that says that if you are 5% of the world population and control 80% of the world's wealth, that means the other 95% of the world population is living off of 20% of the world's wealth. And 10% of that goes to their mother in Europe. So what's left? Ain't nothing left. All the stolen goods is here. So everybody want to come here. That is the psychological stimuli for everybody to come here, because they don't store everything in that all the goodies. So that's why they want people end up coming to America. But we have to bear in mind, you know, this country is still the red man's land. And the red man still wants his land back. See? He still wants America back. This is his homeland. And we neglect our homeland, 12 million square miles of the most valuable real estate on the planet, to say, you know what, I'm going to give up Africa and claim the red man's land here. This is his land. So I'm saying he wants his land back. You know, he ain't dead. I know, I see a lot of them over there in Arizona when I was in Arizona. You know, they're still here. So why deprive the red man of his territorial integrity and turn our back on our legacy? hey, 400 years is long enough. We ain't going to solve your problems here. You're not going to solve your problem in this man's house. See what I'm saying? This man, he make sure, say, look, you ain't going to build no black empire here in America. See what I'm saying? So the sooner we realize that, the better. Now we see the impending conflict coming. And a lot of our young people, they're going to die in that conflict. We know that, you know, a lot of our people going to die because that's who in the service. We're going to be the brunt of whatever is coming. See? So it's just a sad situation, you know, but it is what it is. You know what I'm saying? But I still think that black people are going to rise to the occasion. A lot of us, we're going to lose a lot of our people. But if Africa lives, and the rest of the world dies, we win. So that is the name. That is my little contribution this evening, good brothers. Thank you so much for your program.
Thank you for your contribution, sir.
All right.
Let's go to 215. 215?
Hey, Brother Elliot. How you doing, man?
Hey, sir. How you doing?
Hey, Brother Victor. How you doing, Brother Victor? Glad you're feeling better, my brother.
Great. Thank you.
Praise be to Allah. Hey, Brother Scotty, how you doing, my brother?
Oh, he's still with us. Go ahead, Joe.
He's still with us. That's good. Well, anyway, I just want to acknowledge Brother Scotty. I don't know where to begin. First, Elliot, I want to say this, and Jess, Elliot, I'm depressed right now, Elliot. Can you and Richard and Brother Scotty help me get me out of depression? Because I just saw your favorite football team just got knocked out the playoffs, Elliot.
Yeah, okay.
Your favorite white quarterback knocked out the game in the first quarter. So he has no playoff wins, Elliot. And he got knocked out the game in the first quarter. Poor guy. Poor guy just can't get a break. And
he's right.
And I hope you and Richard, when y'all leave the station, y'all leave at the show, where y'all leave y'all prospective residents, as y'all go to the Ben Franklin Bridge, keep these white folks and some of these Negroes from jumping off the Ben Franklin Bridge tonight, because it might be a mass suicide. Well, but they can always get the mamas back up, so what the heck. Anyway, I was watching CNN earlier today, and Elliot, the narrative, and we need to pay some attention to this, because we can see where this is going. I shared with you, Elliot, the other week, how they did this point of reference, where they continually trying to about blacks is being anti-Semitic and black people like Israelites up to these card attacks when these people call themselves Jews, European Jews. Now I'm watching CNN earlier, so they had their march over the bridge. They had the different people Jews.
Wait a minute, you're breaking up, Joe.
With all races.
Wait a minute, you're breaking up. I didn't hear what you said.
I was saying that, and I was watching CNN earlier today, and they showed up, and can you hear me a little better now, Elliot?
Yeah.
Okay, and they had this march where they had Jews, Muslims, Christians, and people of different races and ethnicities marched over this bridge in New York, this anti-hate march, and the spokesperson was this white Jewish woman. And brother, she was lambasting Al Sharpton and Minister Farrakhan. But here's the kicker.
Wait a minute. Hold. Now, I can see them lambasting Minister Farrakhan. Why were they lambasting Sharpton? They just called him.
And that's the kicker, Brother Elliot.
Go ahead.
This white Jewish lady, she was trying to link Sharpton up with Minister Farrakhan. She was saying that first she jumped.
That's the first time
Farrakhan.
I heard that. No, that's the first time I heard that potential link, but go ahead.
I wish you could pull up CNN from earlier today. And here's the kicker. She was saying that, of course, she said all those dumb stuff that they say about Minister Farrakhan is a Jew hater. He always accused Jews of exploiting black people and all this stuff, saying that the Jews oppress black people and this and that. She was bringing up all that stuff. Then she said, it upset me that one of the newspaper columns recently referred to Al Sharpton as like a modern day Dr. King, and she said she was outraged. She said because Al Sharpton has the history of being anti-Semitic. She said that he led the march, and this is a lie. She said that Sharpton led marches and attacks from Hasidic Jews in New York, which is a lie, because he never did that. Like I said, I've never heard Sharpton or Perm Daddy, as Brother Jay would call him. I have never seen him yet speak out against Israel and their mistreatment of our Palestinian brothers and sisters. And this goes back to a little bit what Brother Scotty was saying.
Or mistreatment of them black Israeli Jews.
Exactly, Brother Scotty, exactly. And Brother Scotty, you raised a good point. We were talking about they always show, like the Venezuela, they always show the lighter skin via Venezuela. It's the same thing with the Palestinians. A lot of people don't know, Brother Scotty. It's a lot of Palestinians look like they, if you didn't put the word Palestinian, they look like they black. I got a picture of a Palestinian sister holding the flag of Yasser Arafat. If you saw this sister, she's like a sister walking down North Philadelphia in the hood. If you didn't see, you took the word Palestinian away. The media don't show you that. All they always show you is the lighter-skinned Arabs or the lighter-skinned Venezuelans or the Palestinians or even Libyans, for that matter. When Brother Gaddafi had an honor guard of sisters, and a lot of them was dark-skinned sisters, man. They was part of Gaddafi's honor guard at one time, man. You know, I mean, but they never show you that and stuff, you know. They always show you the lighter-skinned ones all the time. They paint this narrative that everything is whiter or light-looking and stuff like that. These people got game with them, man. And they always ignore the racial aspect, and this keeps a lot of our people, as well as white folks and everybody else, dumbed down and stuff like that. And they say because the lack of being ignorant is something that keeps our people, you know, ignorant from knowing the true history of what's going on over in that part of the world. But Goma tied this up with the Jewish thing. So this Jewish woman, like I said, she lambasting Sharp and saying he's anti-Semitic and this and that. Then later on this afternoon, I'm watching Sharpton's show on NBC. Who does Sharpton have on as a guest? Guess who, Brother Scotty and Elliot and Richard? He has Jonathan Greenblatt, who's the head of the ADL. Now, here's an individual, as you know, that has attacked Minister Farrakhan, called him a Hitler, you know, all this nonsense and stuff like that. Minister Farrakhan had no history of killing any Jewish people or anybody else for that matter. And so Sharpton had him on there. And it was funny how Sharpton was, you know, tiptoeing around it. So Greenblatt was saying, Reverend Sharpton, you know, we got to stand together against this hate and strain and this hate against Jewish people. He was talking about just Jewish. Sharpton had to make him say, well, it's not just against Jewish people. He said this Islamic phobia, attacks on Muslims, attacks on black people, attacks on gays, lesbians. Sharpton had to prod him to say that because all he wanted to do was focus on the attacks on Jewish people and the criticism of Israel. And he even told Sharpton and Reverend Sharpton, you got to make sure that when stuff come out of your community about attacks on Israel, criticism of Israel or Jewish people, you know, you have to be a strong voice to speak up. And Sharpton said, yeah, well, I'm cool with that. He said, but at the same time, we need to speak out on all of it and stuff like that. So Sharpton gave him a little pushback. But it's just amazing how these people so one-sided in his thinking. All he wanted to do is to stop any criticism of Israel, no matter how bad they treat Black Hebrew Israelites, like Brother Scotty said, or Palestinians, just don't say nothing against them. They should be allowed to do whatever they want to do, and like they should be the only people in the world that's exempt from criticism, no matter what wrongdoing they're doing. You don't supposed to criticize. They're supposed to be some kind of special people, you know what I mean? And this is wrong. But to Sharpton's credit, again, he did give him a little pushback. He didn't let him just get on there and dictate and say what he wanted to say and everything like that. But it's just amazing how these people think and stuff, man. No matter what these people do over there in Israel, You don't supposed to say anything. I mean, they said should be allowed to just kill Palestinians, oppress black Hebrew Israelites, do whatever they want. The Jewish rabbi can be allowed to call black people monkeys. Nobody's supposed to say anything, you know.
Question that maybe y'all can answer, because I heard about what's going on in New York, and I heard about Crown Heights being mentioned, and then I remember the song by Public Enemy where they was talking about, you know, it was an attack on some young black teenagers. So just in that area of New York, there has been, as far as I can remember, tension between them Hasidic Jews, them Orthodox Jews in the black community.
Mm-hmm.
That's correct, Scotty.
Matter of fact, there's a white Jew. He's from Canada, but he's been to Israel. He married to a black woman. His name is David Sheen. I interviewed him years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been putting out, I follow him on YouTube, and over the past few weeks, he's been putting out stuff about the racism of the ADL.
How
racist they are, and showing historical documents and saying, and going back to his founding in New York City and how that dude was trying to copy the Black Panthers. I don't know the guy's name that started it, but trying to wear a beret, and then they was patrolling the Jewish community, but it wasn't to protect the people from the police, but to keep any non-white people or black people out of their community. They was a gang going around with you know, bats and stuff like that. So there's been decades-long history of strife between blacks in New York, in that area, in New York City, in that particular Jewish community.
Oh, no question about it. And see, Brother Scott, when you look at the history, when you go every back and stuff, again, people don't want to deal with the reality and the truth, but Israel was one of the biggest suppliers of weapons that white South Africans used to kill our people in Sharpeville and Soweto. They got supplied by the Israeli government and stuff, you know what I mean? But nobody wants to talk about that. You set up is a anti-Semitic. But see, I noticed that when these Jews, when these white thugs and murderers shut up the synagogue, and what happened is, I want to make it was a horrible thing to kill, go into a synagogue, any places, whether it's either a house of worship or not, and kill innocent people is egregious, and we all should condemn that. But I just find it ironic when these white thugs were shooting up synagogues, and they have shot up many over the last several years, killing innocent Jewish people and everything, and even when Muslims' mosques got attacked and Muslims were killed, I didn't see no Jewish people organize no march. But then all of a sudden, as soon as you get this attack at this kosher market in Jersey City, New Jersey, and this crazed individual at the rabbi's house, and that's still to me why he could find out, just choose that house. This man's going to be crazy as a loon, but he can figure to go into a suburban neighborhood up in New York and break into a Jew rabbi house with a machete. That don't even sound right. But anyway.
Yeah, well, and he broke into a house where not people are sleeping or people are watching TV. They happen to be having a bar mitzvah. I mean, that's it.
Exactly.
Wow, no, what's the chances of that?
And you're not the only one that said, even on Terrestre Radio, one of the brothers said, like almost like a Manchurian candidate type thing, man. I mean, they don't put nothing past these people. They will create any kind of thing to paint their narrative what they want and stuff. You know what I mean? Because we always heard the lies about Iraq back then. They was killing babies. They was killing babies. They incubated all that. Talked about to be a lie. Saddam had weapons of mass destruction. That was a lie. So I don't put nothing past these people in the wickedness and levels they'll go through to paint their narrative and stuff like that, you know? But my point is, Ella, when all these other things happen, you didn't have no marches by these people. Then all of a sudden, when some blacks get accused of attacking Jews, then all
they
of
want
sudden,
marches.
They
yeah.
want to march. You know what I mean? And you can go back even, and I close with this so some else could get on. Even when criticism of Jewish people, I've seen Pat Buchanan, who's one of the most racist, biggest you can find, conservative, who was one of Nixon's henchmen. He the one that created that dirty politics for the South, where the Republicans was to play dirty, go down the South and blame the so-called niggas on your problems, and we get the white Southern vote. That was Pat Buchanan, one of the orchestrators of that during the Nixon campaign. Well, Pat Buchanan, I've seen on CNN, on shows like CNN, PBS, and he didn't. And this white man don't bite his tongue. I've seen him criticize Israel to the high heavens. I don't want American soldiers. He's mainly talking about white, even though he says American. I don't want to see American blood being shedded for the Israeli lobby. I don't want to see not one ounce of American blood be shedded for Israel and stuff. And no. And then these Jews, the ADL, open up their damn mouth. I've heard other white boys say, of course you can go back to Billy Graham and all them, the tapes on them, trash the Jews, the dirty, stinking Jews, they call them. They don't say one word, but let Minister Farrakhan or Leonard Jeffries or somebody just come up with just legitimate criticism, but just criticism of Israel, they anti-Semitic, they Hitler, they're a Jew hater. But these white boys like Pat Buchanan and Billy Graham and that ilk, they can say whatever they want about Israel, and they don't open up their damn mouth. I mean, I just get so sick of these spineless Negroes on out and in black leadership who see this double stand. They don't say nothing. Minister Farrakhan criticized Israel and Jewish people for their wrongdoing against blacks or Palestinians. He's an anti-Semite, but a Jewish rabbi can sit up there and call black people monkeys, justified by the Talmud. Them niggas open up their damn mouth, and then I close with this, Elliot. All these black Christians, they got to be some of the most spineless Negroes in the world, especially these ministers, because they claim that they love their Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. But yet them rabbis in Israel say that Jesus deserved to be boiled in feces, excrement, feces. Their Lord and Savior, who they claim they love so much, they don't say nothing. But yet they say, we love our Jewish brothers. We want a Christian Jewish coalition. Well, how the hell are you going to have one with people that say that your Lord and Savior should be bold and extra, man? I don't understand that. You don't say nothing. But you ready to jump on Minister Farrakhan for anything he says that you perceive to be anti-Semitic. I mean, you got to be kidding me. I never seen such spineless Negroes in my life, man. Come on, man. Come on. But hey, that's all I'm going to say. Thanks, Brother Ellen and Richard and Brother Scott. I listened to the rest of the show. But like I said, I'm going to probably get in the car and drive over to the Ben Franklin Bridge to save some from my white brother and sister from committing suicide tonight, because since the Eagles going home for the winter, I don't see no mass suicide tonight.
Yeah, well, don't get wet.
Okay, Brother Ellen. Y'all tell us. Y'all take care, man. Peace.
All right, peace.
Let's grab our last caller here. 646.
Yeah, now you know Little Joe just going to jump because he upset the Eagles' loss. He know he's an Eagles fan. I don't even know why he come on there and play. Little Joe, I got love for you, brother. Don't do it. Please don't do it. Hey, listen, Richard, I'm glad to hear you back, man. You've been trying to hang out with the Muckety Mucksters and got yourself sick, I see, huh? You got to stay away from the Muckety Mucksters, man. They got bad vibes. Also, I had to go and take me a little puff with that comment you made about us black folks being supportive of this war. You know the Negro doing more crying and more praying for Fredo Trump than anybody in the world. You know what I mean? These Negroes are scared to death that something going to happen to them and that America must stand because they don't want to go no place. Now, I would like to say to you, Brother Elliot, thank you very much for having one of the finest guests that you've had on in a long time, Brother Scotty. The only person missing was Franklin Jones to go along and have say-so in the dialogue in which we are speaking this evening, in regards to this murderous dumb bastard that's in the White House, who's basically don't know what the hell he's doing. He don't even have a clue on what he's doing. He's just reacting like a petulant child when, you know, he's chastised or told to go sit in the corner or something of that nature with this whole impeachment thing.
Do you think he was able to implement what Hawks have been wanting to do since Bush the Younger?
No, because the general that he killed was not supposed to be killed. Remember.
His family wanted him dead, though, brother.
did you hear that?
No. Let me finish the point. For the last 20-some years, this general has been in the forefront, and every president done wanted to do him. But because of the intelligence within that hemisphere, it was told to leave him alone. Let him do his thing. Right. You understand what I'm saying? Because the ramifications of killing him was not worth the problem. But because you're dealing with a dumbass, like Trump, who thinks he knows everything and thinks that he has the mind for what's happening, he wants to go ahead and show that he's... You remember that movie Rounders with Matt Damon, the rusted guy, when he says after he's losing, you big and bad and all of that? That's how Trump is behaving. And the bottom line is...
It's just him being dumb, bro.
Oh, no, it's not. It's not.
Here's my point. Look, he already then bragged about how much the Saudis is buying up his rooms and his hotels, and then you got his son-in-law making deals over there in Saudi Arabia, and then, you know, Netanyahu, the indicted criminal over there, named one of them illegal settlements after Trump, and then you got, you know, the billionaire.
You're not looking at the big picture, bro.
I'm saying he's the dummy. He's the dummy that did what them fools wanted him to do. They've been begging him to do that. And Elliot brought up what you brought up earlier, is that Obama They want Israelis wanted Obama asked for permission to kill them themselves, and Obama wouldn't let them do them. And right. Bush
hey, look, Scotty, let's be clear about something. Let's be clear about something in regards to Trump. Trump is not a statesman. He's not a politician. He's not an intellectual. He's about money. And let's be clear about something. You may not see it. Let me finish the point, please. Let me finish the point. You may not see it now, but whenever he's in office, whenever he's out of office in the presidency, he's going to be destroyed. They're going to destroy him because everything that he's doing in regards to these other countries, they're going to get it for it. Believe me.
Wait a minute. Who's going
to get him? I'll tell you right now who's going to get him. The New York State Attorney General is going to get him for mail fraud. The New York Attorney General is going to get him for tax evasion. Yo, my man, he's a dead goose.
But this is
all a game.
Yeah, but
this is just $80 million bounty on his head. Did you hear about that? The $80 million bounty.
That's a joke. That's a joke, bro. That's a joke. $80 million.
Yeah, but
billions that are play. That's laughable.
Yeah, but Jack,
I don't think that this is about remote control, Scotty.
$80 million. That ain't even no money.
Jay, hold on a second.
They'll say whoever does it. If they're captured or they killed, they'll give $80 million to your family. Then that's a different story, bro.
Hey, Jay.
All of this is talk.
Jay, hold on a second. Richard, go ahead.
Yeah, the perspective I've come from is dealing with that there's always been a fight within the, you know, they call it the deep state, right? That there's been a fight going on between these two types of policy initiatives, and the one that Trump has been able to align himself is the one that has not been able to get the okay to do what they want to do, which is to utilize force, extreme force, at will. It's only till Trump that they have been able to do that.
Richard, let me ask you this question. Think about this. Has he ever been a player with these people?
But it's not.
But you gotta think about it. He's being manipulated.
That's the point I'm making, though. That's the point I'm making. The question is by who?
He's being manipulated by the people that you're talking about. That will cast him aside when it's necessary. I mean, Trump is.
That only confirms.
He's basically a dead man walking. Because if Obama, who is part of the system, didn't do it, and Bush,
well, he's part of the system too, Jay. He's not part of the system.
He's not part of the system.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is.
He wouldn't be there if he didn't.
Okay. Well, listen. I'm gonna tell you this. Don't put your go ahead, Richard. Finish your thought.
No. Go ahead.
Don't put your money on when he gets out of office that he's gonna be arrested and put in jail. That ain't gonna happen. All these other presidents that did dastardly stuff, Ollie North, Reagan, Nixon, all them people, if they'd spent any time in jail, they was pardoned. All them guys that went to jail for whatever Trump did, gonna get pardons. And Trump ain't gonna serve a day in jail for nothing. Wait a minute. The way you're describing it, it's like Trump going in a room and pushing buttons. I'm gonna kill this guy myself. It don't work like that. I saw a guy the other day on the news, and somebody got to help me. Maybe Brother Otis can. One of these guys that's in head of some type of special force that was in the meetings with Trump was also Obama's guy in the same position. And I should have got his name and wrote his name down, and I didn't. Because he caught me when I was getting ready to leave home. But I saw the clip when they were talking about what happened. It happened Saturday morning. He was on the morning news show. He was in that same office under one of those military branches that he was under the Obama administration, and he's still serving under Trump. Trump is not making these decisions on his own. You got people there that's making it for him. It's American policy what he's doing.
Right.
It's American policy.
American policy ain't my policy.
I ain't say it was.
American policy ain't mine. I don't care about American policy if the truth.
Well, you're talking about it, though.
How many of these bastards get killed?
Well, I don't know why you're concerned about Trump going to jail.
On the point of being killed, I was thinking about a silver lining to all of this. And believe me, I don't want to see millions of people possibly getting killed in World War III, because this could really blow up in that region. But here's a silver lining to that. I was looking at, again, the birth rate of these white people is being lower than their death rate, meaning it's more of them dying than is being born. And
right.
A lot of that, I feel like, and the media ain't touching upon it, it's because of these constant wars, you know, because them the ones that's always on the front lines, them the ones that's always joining special forces. Not to say, you know, we don't have a spackling of some black and non-white people, but them, and then they come back and then they killing themselves. The number one group that's killing themselves with handguns is white males. And so,
Yeah. Possibly
this is a silver lining that, you know, that they will be out of the majority even quicker, because if you can't, because if you ain't got no males, then you can't produce no children. That's going to be
also, you also got to understand that within that region, there's also a thing in regards to population control, but they never talk about it. You see what I mean?
Yeah, that's,
so
that,
this
that's
is why
true.
It's
that's
continuous.
True.
It's continuous wars going on there because of the growth of the population. Europe, right. None of these European countries or white ethnic countries' population is growing on the level that one would expect it to be. That's why you have Greece having the problems that they have in the Netherlands, and all of these other countries having problems. But it boils down to this. It's total manipulation. You see what I'm saying? And when you hear black people talk about this, I always wonder, what stake do you have in this? Why are you so concerned about this and don't care nothing about your home? Every other nationality in this country, people care about their home and what's going on in their home. Why are we the only ones?
I heard a black dude tell me, this is what he told me, like, he all for this because they attacked our embassy. I said, our embassy, that's your embassy.
and when we place that in historical context, there's always, I mean that gets to this narrative, right? You hear this narrative since the Revolutionary War, there's been black people who've been fighting the war even when they weren't necessarily free. The Revolutionary War, War 1812. And because I would like to move from the perspective of we all have agency, right? We could say this brainwashing, but what about if they made the choice? What about if a large population because of the American experience, this particular experience, have made the choice? And I've always used Philadelphia and that whole thing. 1777, the British came, offered black people in Philadelphia who were enslaved, 1777, because the gradual didn't step to 1780, offered them to go, they could fight with the Ethiopian army. They did not, the notables, the Richard Allen, the Absalom Jones, you know, the other, they fought, they said they were not going to fight with the British. And very few left with the British, a lot more stay. So I'm saying when you expand that, over time, there is a lot of Americans of African descent who have been a part of the American experience, even if slavery, enslavement is a part of that experience, who made the conscious choice to say, America, in spite of my condition, it is what I will protect and defend. And, we just had, now that ain't been the only body here, but that's been a part of the body. And we discount that then we discount the ability.
I want you to consider this. Consider this, though, bro. I can speak from personal experience. I didn't join the military, and I don't. None of my friends I made in the military, my black friends who I'm still in contact with to this day through Facebook, none of us joined because we was for God and country and all that crap. We were part of the poverty draft. We called poor and middle class. And it was the same reason. Remember, I was talking about the Buffalo Soldier. Now, this is after the Civil War. Now, why would you stay in the military and then go fight and kill Indians for some land that they won't even let black people settle on?
Right.
It's because of poverty. You know, I'm not going to say some of them wasn't brainwashed to be red, white, and blue and all that, but the majority of them was doing it because that's one of the few jobs they could get and get three square meals and get some clothing on their back and have a roof over their head.
Oh, yeah.
I don't discount the material reality. It's just that in that choice, and we have to allow. I try to allow, you know, from a historical perspective and even present, allow them to have that agency. And the challenge, though, is for us to ask them, well, as I think I heard you say, Jay, at what point are you willing to sacrifice for this choice, those right here in front of you? Now, I'm not going to let you get off the hook by not asking the question, or I'm not going to make sure that you're not going to be in the position, because whether I call you a collaborator, whether I call you a traitor, whether I see that you are my natural opposition. But when you tell me that you're going to, you know, Scotty, allow poverty to persist and defend a country that is really pursuing wealth in foreign lands and destroying foreign people, just out of whether it be out of patriotism, it be out of loyalty, or out of your ignorance, then you in my way.
And yeah, that's people don't think like that, Richard.
You know what?
People don't take that type of analysis.
This is what caused me to get out. Two things caused me to get out of the military. I made the decision while I was in Saudi Arabia during the Gulf War. I had an S3 position. I had a top secret security clearance. And I got access. I had access to data. I had to fax certain data to certain places. And I'm reading this data. And I was just discovering Malcolm X, reading his biography and really immersing myself in that, because I was picturing, you know, Malcolm being over there on his Hajj and what have you. And that was my awakening, was through reading his biography. But then I started reading them casualty assessment reports, and they were killing thousands and thousands and thousands of civilians. And I'm looking at this on as numbers on a piece of paper, you know, because George Bush, H.W. Bush said, we're going to bomb them for 40 days and 40 nights. Right. They were bombing civilians, man.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't just, and I was like, I said, I cannot be a part of this. And as soon as my tour duty was up, I was out in a couple of months. I couldn't do it anymore.
Most kids don't understand that reality, what Scotty just spoke about.
But it's only because we're not speaking loud enough.
Yeah, it's up to us to tell.
That reality.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not necessarily to convince anybody, because
you have no terrestrial radio host speaking out against what's going on
exactly.
And educating black folks. But there's not one.
You know why? Because their vested interest as a business, the way this is all intertwined, their vested interest as a business has them to make a choice. Just like they can be, just like those non-governmental organizations, call them the Urban League or call them NAACP, call them all these things they got going around, and these black people are sitting in these bureaucratic who are looking at the numbers of the effect that is happening on black people, and they say nothing. they say nothing. Those people who run those businesses, they say, well, do I want that advertised dollar? Or do I and stay in business, or do I advocate and have to deal with the situation of me advocating? And
Richard, that's cowardly. You know why I say it's cowardly? Because think about this. Just think about this. And let's be honest. With all of the support that these radio stations give the Democratic Party, do them bastards ever give them any advertising?
But that's the point. Could they don't have to.
Yeah.
And they know they don't have to.
But if you put enough pressure on them and you be critical of them and you sometimes tell the truth about them, like the Democratic Party just giving this guy $78 trillion to be able to do what he just did, then you're in a situation where you could hold people accountable. But just like these people me to vote for these clowns to get Fredo out of office, I'm not listening to them.
Yeah, but if they
because
do that,
they stand up for nothing.
But if they do that, Jay, they won't be on the air. So when you ask the question, why don't they do this, you answered your own question.
You know who was in your town? You know who was in your town, and I liked him. He was one of the only radio hosts in Philadelphia I would tune in when Bob Law was on the station, WHUD. It was my man, Charles, I think his name was Al Butler, whatever. And he was a young cat, the mulatto, Al. I used to call him up and mess with him every now and then. That was the only guy that I could honestly say, and I guess that's why they get rid of him and he never got back on radio, is that every now and then he would drop a tooth bomb. I guess it was his white side coming out of him.
And when you look at that lineup, to waste time on that, but when you look at the lineup of these institutions, because they're allowed one because they got that one so that we can listen to them. That's how we stay connected. All of them ain't doing that. Station is not doing that.
Hey, listen.
And that's
what you ever, how could you ever trust a man? And I'm talking about Little Joe's favorite person, Perm Daddy Al Sharpton. How could you ever trust a man that's evil on television or radio 7 days a week? That's an agent. That's a provocateur. That's the enemy of your people because he's doing nothing but trying to manipulate you and control your opinions, thoughts, and ideas with his constant everyday rhetoric. I can't think of nobody else in radio. Nobody that's on the air 7 days a week. I know people that may do it for 6 days, and the only reason they do it 6 days is because they have a different format on Sunday. But I know no other person that's on 7 days a week.
Well, he's getting paid well to do that, and
how did you trust him?
Let's say that again.
How did you trust him?
Wait,
how
I didn't
do you hear. Trust somebody like that? How do you really, when you think about how America uses propaganda and all of the other tools that they use to brainwash you, how could you trust somebody like that?
Well, you can't. But the thing is this. We do have alternatives. It's alternatives out there.
And that's what we listen to.
It's alternatives out there. What Scotty has built is an alternative. The host is an alternative.
The point of the matter is, how many people know about Scotty? How many people know about Time and the Waking? I tell people about it all the time, but that don't mean that they tune in they hook line and sinker on this character.
And that's okay for me. That's okay. Because, you know, going back to this and, you know, this, reality of, say, Israel, their minority population, when you talk about white population in general, they're even a smaller minority population. But they have amassed within their sphere a power relationship that has in proportional power relationship in relationship to their size. We can't deny that. Now the question is, I don't get into dealing with them because the question is, how do we do that? That's the situation we have to solve. Not the masses of people that are not.
Huh?
You have to have the land base to be able to do that. You have to have a central place
without a land base, because they got Israel, they didn't have a land base.
Yeah, so but they the didn't thing have... is, now that they have, they were never as powerful as they were, as they are now, once they
but
got
they
Israel.
But they had to be powerful enough to get a land base in a place where people were already occupied.
There was manipulation involved. Remember, there was the Holocaust.
And what I'm saying is...
Then there was manipulation. Then there was money exchange. Then there was other key positions that allowed for Israel to be created.
I don't want to go to the genealogy of how their power development exists. I want to go to, the asymmetrical reality of where we are, power for our power, and I'm talking about people who make this particular analysis. We have to figure out how do we create the power relationship, not necessarily even for ourselves, because do we want the generation after and the generation after that to be having the same discussion that we're having? So, and we're going to only excuse that we have is that because the masses of black folks ain't woke, or the masses of black folks are like that or like this, even for our own survival. Shouldn't we be figuring out?
Richard, black folks are never going to progress.
What? No.
We have a land base. We have a land base where we can centrally say, this is our war front. Until we get to that point where we can centralize someplace that is our protector, we ain't never going to progress on the level that we should, because every other nationality has a place where they identify as their base. And because of that, they're not treated like we are. They don't treat Puerto Ricans like they treat us. They don't treat Jamaicans like they treat us. They don't treat Barbadians like they treat us. They don't treat the Italians. They treat no other ethnic group like they treat black folks and African folks on a certain level, because we don't have a land base. Think about this.
Wait a minute. You're talking about black folks when you're talking about Barbadians or Jamaicans. Who are you talking about? They ain't from Mars. What you talking about?
I'm going to point something out to you. When Aminu Diallo was shot at 42 times, and what happened to him, his African country put pressure on the United States to make certain things happen.
Okay.
Had a base like that here,
we have a relationship like that. If we had a relationship like that, if we, you know, like right now, the African countries, and it may not even be just for us, but just in last year, 2019, Ghana, you know, and African countries are astounded. Ghana made $1.9 billion off of the year return. But the point I'm making is, and I'm going to keep using this word because this is my mantra. Until we act mature, we're supposed to negotiate those terms with those African countries that you call a land base, or any country. We're talking about the Caribbean, South America. You know, we're talking about the Brits, the black Brits in Britain. But you can't expect them to just come to you and say, I'm going to help you out. First of all, what is it that you got that they really see that it's worth their interest when they dealing with their stuff to be helping you out? You got to present that.
I tell you this much. I see the Caribbean growing. I see the Caribbean developing over the next couple of years more than we can imagine. And the reason why I say that is, because now people that have came to this country and have worked for years and have gotten pensions, they're going back home and they're building it up slowly but surely. I know like 6 people that retired from transit and other city jobs that have gone back to Jamaica and Barbados, and they're doing their thing. They're putting together organizations and they preparing themselves to be able to go there and build it up. So there's a lot of things happening with other nationalities from the African diaspora and other African segments within our population that's moving forward. We better figure out where our place is and stop getting caught up in this ADOS nonsense and this COBRA and all of that, which is basically another story, and get our act together. Because everybody is starting to figure it out and see what's going on and looking for their survival. And there's lessons being taught to people. Think about the Puerto Ricans, the island was destroyed, and the behavior of the United States, who is supposed to be their overseer, their daddy, and the way their daddy treated them. Hey, there's going to be repercussions for that. But they're coming here and they're doing what they're supposed to do to regroup. See, everybody's regrouping, as far as I'm concerned, to be able to play a role on the planet, when these clowns like Trump and the rest of them are just trying to destroy it. But it's going to all balance out.
Thank you for your contribution, brother.
Hey, brother, I want to thank y'all tonight for the very entertaining show. And, oh, listen, Elliot, I want to tell you, the sister was very good on Friday. I look forward to her, you know, developing and growing and, you know, doing what she do. I'm very thankful that she was able to find her, because it seems like she's what you call her, you know? Hotel, everyone, and have a good night. And Richard, yep. Are you better and willing to go back to the daddy tomorrow?
I'm always willing.
Oh, so are you going back to the daddy and give him your services?
Are you going to
recuperate some more?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. Depending on how much you done took out of me once we shut down tonight.
Hey, Elliot, put me on hold, bro. Have a good night, everyone.
Peace. Yeah, Richard. You know, it was an interesting dialogue tonight. One thing I wanted to mention, just press for time, that when it was mentioned by Jay that the people are going back, and he was talking about people from Jamaica or Barbados like they're a separate entity. We got to realize that I don't care whether people go back with a pension that they receive from this country, if our people have the same mentality. Or going back to countries that are neo-colonial representatives of this United States, it's going to be more of the same. We have to change our mindset. It's the mind that's causing our problems for our people. If we develop a new mindset and change our mind and approach, that's 98% of the fight. It's our mindset. It's our mindset. Totally. We have developed a European mind, and it has hurt our people. That's like oil and water. It don't mix. We have to develop a new mindset to move our people forward. We have to. If we keep the same mindset we have, then you're going to have our people pulling at one another, the same things that a 1% of people in control, bourgeois blacks thinking that they have arrived and looking down at the other 99% of us. The same type of caste system that was set up during our chattel enslavement.
There you go.
Hey, Elliot and Richard, I want to speak to something. We talked about this earlier, Elliot, and I told you to kind of keep it on the down low. But speaking of something that Jay just brought up, you know, Malcolm said that media controls the minds of the masses.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And when you got on black radio, all of those proxies, I call them proxies of racism, proxies of white supremacy, misinforming our people and developing these whack mindsets, then it tells me that how do we combat that? But with our own media. Now, he's telling the truth when he says, well, you know, a lot of people don't know about us. Well, you know, we do have a global audience, but I agree we need to reach more. And in order for us to reach more, we need the ones that listen by the thousands to make contributions.
I know.
So that we can then have a budget so that we can put out some advertisements, put up a billboard and telling people about Black Talk Radio Network and all of our affiliates and the different programming, you know, because a couple of years back when I had a little money, you know, I was spending, I hate to have gave money to Mark Zuckerberg, but a lot of our people is on there and they allow you to target people by country. And I was targeting English speaking people in Africa and, you know, because some of them nations, they speak English and what have you. And then also in South America, and I targeted people in the Caribbean. And the responses I got back to those ads, man, were real positive, you know. And so I know that it's people out there that's hearing us all over. But, you know, it take money, man. It take money in order for us to expand operations. And if it ain't nothing but just, I understand a lot of our people ain't got a lot of money, man, but you got a dollar, you got $2, you got, you know what I'm saying? You probably spend about, what, $20 a month on soda or something, you know? So we got to support institutions, man, and I feel like we are an institution. We've been around over 11 years now.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I know that some plans coming down the pike in the future, and we'll talk about it on Time for Awakening when, you know, when you kind of let me know exactly what you got planned. But you're right. These mediums need to be supported. When you talk about Black Talk Radio Network with a membership of $24 a year, that's $2 a month, a little over $2 and a few cents a month. That's all for a membership. When we talk about donations to Time for Awakening, you can give a dollar. I mean, we got to do something. We can't have everybody's doing this stuff off just to care for the Black community. We not getting no likes on social media. We not developing no followers, and what you call that when you get a certain amount of followers, some monetary. What do you call it, Rich? I don't even know, because I'm not on social media for that.
Yeah, that's all I know is likes and subscriptions.
Yeah, monetize your stuff and all that. Yeah, right. You know, come on. You know, some of these folks is on here for popularity. I don't care who they are. They're on here for popularity. They need to get their name out. You got people on and doing what we're doing here, especially on the Black Talk Radio Network, that's out here to get the information to the people, period. No sensationalism, no self-aggrandizement, just to get the information out. And, you know, these things, mediums deserve to be supported. And like Scotty was saying, when you're talking about $2, $5 a month, you ain't even talking about $5 a week. You're talking about $2, $5, $10, if somebody can afford $10 a month. A membership to BTR, Black Talk Radio Network, is $2 a month, $25 a year. You'll hear more information about some things coming down the pike soon for the listeners of the program. Before we leave, I want to give the lineup for this week going forward. And it's, again, it's a new program also on Fridays. And send in your comments to timeforawakening@gmail.com. In reference to the Esoteric Review with Sister Marcy, she did her debut on Friday. She was on from 1 to 2. She had an hour. I'm trying to talk her into doing more. But send your comments, and if you want to see her do more, or be involved more in some of the programming, send in your comments to timeforawakening.com@gmail.com. And also send in some suggestions for future guests, suggestions for future topics. Utilize the website. You can leave messages on the website. And you can always use the email to send in some topics. We got to be involved in the reclamation of the minds of our people. We can't just sit back and let me hear what Richard's going to say this week. You know, we just can't do that. We got to become involved. If you got suggestions for topics, utilize the email, utilize the websites, leave your information. If you know some authors, if you know an interesting book, that you maybe want us to reach out to the author to, that have on the program to ask them questions, so you could ask them questions. We're more than welcome to hear these suggestions. Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. African Perspectives with Brother Oshie. Always interesting dialogue on African Perspectives. That's 1 to 3, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. After the program, Acres of Diamonds from 6 to 8 with Jihad Ahmed. From 6 to 8 on Time for an Awakening on the first and third Monday of every month. Conversation Reparations, the ENCOBRA program, is on from 9 to 10 on Time for an Awakening. And looks like Warren Ballantyne is back on the grind again, so he'll be on during the Warren Ballantyne podcast from 10 to 12 on Time for an Awakening on Tuesday. Black Reality, losing my voice, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10 on Time for an Awakening on Wednesday. Revive with Sister POC from 8 to 10 on Time for an Awakening on Thursday. Relationships with Joy and Troy from 7 to 8, and Time for an Awakening is back on Friday from 8 to 10. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion as always, and we'll be back on Friday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so unaware. I know the things that they'll soon have to take care of. Children, soon it will be their turn to try and save the world. Right now they seem to play such a small part of.
children. Soon it will be their turns to try and save the world. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. To save the children. To save the children.